We can start up. That's Dexter Gordon on tenor sax interpreting Donald Byrd's composition called Tanya. This was recorded in 1964. It was remastered in 1999. Donald Byrd is on trumpet. Art Taylor is on drums. Niels Henning Orsted Pearson, that's one word, one name, on bass, and Kenny Drew on piano. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I tell you, I am grateful to be here today with you because it was kind of iffy yesterday. Florida is a very strange place. The morning started out beautifully. And I have learned since being here to always check the weather in the morning, especially if I'm going out. And the weather was fine. No severe warnings, nothing. And I did have to get some things from the grocery store, which is just about 5 minutes away. And I said, well, let me go pick some stuff up, come back, and I'll have plenty of time. Plenty of time before the show. And it didn't work out that way. I picked up my items from the grocery store, and right next to the grocery store was a little kind of cafe, and I decided I'll have a cup of coffee. And on cue, this incredible rainstorm started. I've never seen this much rain in my life. It was very scary. And, you know, with the thunder and everything else, it was really outrageous. I'm stuck. I could walk home, but I wouldn't dare walk home in that rain. And it took forever to stop. And then it started causing all these other problems. We had quite a few fender benders, and traffic was snarled. Nobody was moving. It caused flash flooding. It was just insane. I'd never seen anything like that. And then I said, well, I am not going to go out in the rain and suddenly attract a bolt of lightning, and that would be the end of me. So I called for a cab, which was crazy because if the weather was that bad, no cabs are going to come up. Cabs are going to be available, and that was the case. No cabs were available. So finally, there are a couple of cab drivers I use regularly, and I have their phone numbers, and I called them up and I said, Are you on duty right now? And one of them said, no, I could come and get you. Well, it took forever, but he was such a brave soul to come and get me. So I was so happy about that. Got home, opened the front door, and entered my apartment, and I'm hearing this funny sound, squish, squish, squish. And I looked down at my whole living room area, living room and dining room, and the hallway leading to both, flooded. Why? Because I did not close the door to the patio before I left. But you know what? I'm here. I survived it. My neighbors survived it. And now we just have to learn from that, that crazy things could happen at a moment's notice, and it could totally turn your life upside down. Who knew? Well, today is a very special day. It is Juneteenth, and it would be good if somebody could call in and tell us what Juneteenth is very briefly, and so we can move on to the rest of the program. Anybody want to talk about Juneteenth and what it is, or what you have come to learn about it and what it means? Are you there? Any takers? All right, let's try Ma'at from New York. You ought to know.
Yes. Greetings to the beloved family and happy Juneteenth. My
Thank you.
understanding, and I'm always learning, is that 2 years after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, particularly the folks in Texas weren't passed the word until General Gordon, I'm blanking on his last name, got to Texas and announced
Granger.
that.
Granger.
Excuse me?
Gordon Granger.
Thank you. And of course, there were people who were doing their own things, trying to find their families and doing their own liberation things. So that's another aspect of the story. In terms of, and Eutrice, please be careful and make sure that you know, sometimes we have to be extra cautious now. Make sure that you research MOLD, M-O-L-D, remediation,
Oh,
because you
yes, I
don't
already
want,
have. I already have
yeah, that's
somebody
very
coming to look at it.
important, especially as to that black mold and some very, very dangerous and deadly mold. So we'll be praying and meditating for it, for you on that. But
Thank
I
you.
first want to say hi to Patricia and say to her that she got it right the first time, and then she corrected herself. The NYPD, that is 6 billion, billions with a B, okay? And I know it's hard to grasp one's head around because Attorney General Tish James, I just happened to kind of monitoring BAI, so I missed the first 3 hours Wednesday, but Wednesday and Thursday, and I'm going to make sure or follow up and make sure there's some archive because everybody needs to listen to the people who participated in the protests. And you heard it from one end of the other, in terms of the people who have status as white, how they were just appalled by the brutality and the beatings and the uncouth and savage behaviors of the police, and asking for one testimony. Was saying that he mentioned four city departments. I think it was HPD, Housing, Homeless Services, and two. The NYPD gets more money that so he and many others were asking for at least half of the budget of the NYPD be directed to services for the community that actually uplifts and helps the community. But the testimony was real, and in fact, it must be on the WBAI archive, because even if you only listen to it in 1 hour snatches, it went from like 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. I mean, I couldn't move away. It's just so enlightening in terms of we are moving forward and they're going to have to redesign. Now, in New York City, two things very quickly. That Juneteenth is going to become a holiday henceforth. And
national or local? There are moves afoot in Congress to make it a national holiday.
Exactly.
So and
the other thing, something I mentioned yesterday, is New York City, as I understand it, is going to set up and go forward with what they call a racial justice and Reconciliation Commission. Sometimes it's called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So we are at a pivotal, seminal point, and we need to run with it.
All right. Well, thank you for getting us started today. Although I would suggest to everyone, rather than tell you about Juneteenth, and, you know, I have my notes and everything in front of me, it is important that you do this yourself. Read a bit about it, and then let's have a good discussion about it. But Ma'at gave us some of the basics, which have to do with the fact that although President Lincoln had affirmatively declared the end of slavery in the United States, it was 2 years before the folks in Texas got word of it. So they went an extra 2 years in servitude, in slavery. And they got wind of it when General Gordon Granger and about thousands of federal troops came into Texas to tell them that slavery was over. And of course, people were very jubilant and very thrilled that this was over. But of course, it wasn't over. This was after 155 years. It just doesn't get over like that. It doesn't end like that. So I would encourage you to do some reading. You don't have to become a historian, but you should know what Juneteenth is all about and why people celebrate it and why there is this effort. Even Donald Trump thinks it's a good idea, especially since he claims personal credit for making it known. It wasn't known as a holiday until Trump said so. God. But anyway, do some reading and you will get an appreciation for what this was all about and all of the other things that tie into it. 155 years. And people had no idea that they were free, finally free, at least on paper. But of course, from that, white America, white supremacist America in particular, devised all kinds of ways to achieve the same ends of mass control with all kinds of laws and codes and ways in which they could control people's movements and what they can do and can't do. Even when the national law was that slavery was over. And that continued all up to present day. All these various ways of controlling, quote, undesirable populations, unquote. Do some reading for yourself. Do some self-education, and probably in a week or two, you should have a pretty good understanding to engage in a meaningful conversation about it. I don't want to tell people, I really hate it when I have to tell people what happened. It makes me the sole source of their information. I could be wrong, you know, just on the offside, I could be wrong. It is always best if something pops up that isn't familiar to you, get energetic about doing some reading for yourself. And then when you think you have a hang of it, you have an understanding of it, we can come together and discuss. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Noel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Eutrice. This is
Hello.
Noel, like you said. Hi. I just wanted to ask a question since all the things that had gone on in Minneapolis and in the killing that went on in Georgia and Atlanta. What would it take, in your opinion, I think it's the Attorney General of the state of New York, what would it take to bring to justice Pantaleo and the rest of his band of gypsies?
Well, don't denigrate gypsies. They're a very honorable group.
Yeah.
I'm associating Pantaleo with them.
Yeah. And you know there was a black woman sergeant there,
just
too.
Just to give an idea, just give a little snippet of who Pantaleo is and why you consider him important to discuss.
Well, because of you know, he's gotten away with murder and the rest of the...
Say who he is.
I'm sorry, he's a police officer. Well, he was a police officer.
Was. And? What did he become
and he
known
got
for?
Away with murder. I'm not sure I'm understanding your point.
Well, the great debacle that occurred at his hands was the I Can't Breathe debacle, in
right.
which he choked to death Eric Garner.
Right.
It was just a monstrous thing that he did. And it
well,
was
using your words,
tortured
and choked.
I'm sorry?
I say using your words, tortured and choked. I mean, it was the same thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And other officers stood by and did not come to Garner's help. The medical personnel who responded did not come to Garner's help. In fact, he was dead before they moved him off the scene, supposedly to seek treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But Pantaleo headed up this pack of police officers who were roaming the streets looking for what quality of life crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And happened upon Eric Garner. And at that time, Eric Garner, he said, was seen selling what they called loosies. That's loose
right.
cigarettes.
Right.
And that deserved, according to Pantaleo, an arrest, immediate arrest. Mm-hmm. And they all descended on him, but Pantaleo distinguished himself because he approached Eric Garner from the rear. He was short. Garner was
right,
a big,
yes.
burly
mm-hmm.
man. He literally had to run up on his back.
And jump,
then
basically.
Chokehold.
Right. So
and
to answer
so,
the question, what do you think would it take the Attorney General of the state of New York? To bring him and the others, and again, there was a black woman sergeant who just watched. What would that take?
It's all about the people, the people's will. That's mm-hmm. what they fear the most, the people's will.
Okay.
If we are thinking that there would be an automatic inquiry, and there would be people in the police department who would find it as troubling as we do, and illegal and inhumane, and begin, first of all, you fire all those people who were there and did nothing.
That's correct.
You seek justice. But, you know, it's the will of the people. That's it.
Why do you think the will of the people was strong for Floyd and others, and this one, which was just as heinous, is not? I'm not sure why.
Anyways, by the time this chokehold, or I should say the snuffing out of George Floyd's life occurred, Eric Garner set the pattern for law enforcement. How you deal with people, how you don't have to shoot people anymore to get rid of them. You pinch this nerve, you press on that vein, you know, and this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time Floyd came along, departments all over the United States had experienced the application of techniques applied in the Garner case,
mm-hmm.
and that yielded the desired result, which is the death of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no shooting. Before, they would just shoot you. But now they refined the techniques, and people got into the martial arts. They got into Eastern martial arts, especially where, with the manipulation of pressure points on the body, the same effect can be had, which is you kill a person without firing a bullet.
It would be remiss, for us not to mention that the New York City Police Department is trained by the Israelis.
Well, it doesn't matter who they're trained by. The people, it comes down to the people.
I disagree with you because how the Palestinians are being treated in over there.
I think it does matter. Any part of the world where you have this animosity, this push and pull, and this insistence, as Donald Trump used the word, to dominate. The police forces are not there to assist, to help, to, you know, solve crimes and so forth. They're there simply to dominate and control the people. That is a mm-hmm. desired purpose of police forces. It's all over the world. And when people demonstrate a lack of concern about the way things are going, and they leave these paramilitary forces to do whatever they want to do, that's exactly what will happen. They'll do whatever they want to do.
In certain communities.
Well, it's not just certain communities. It is wherever they meet with little or no resistance, that's what they will do.
Well, I disagree with you again, and because this is a worldwide show, we have to, because you and I are New Yorkers, and Williamsburg is a portion of Brooklyn, New York, that has a predominant Jewish community. There's never been, and there's another, what's the other one, Yatrice?
There's another one
in Brooklyn. I can't remember. Anyway, Williamsburg is probably the most famous. But there's never been, to the best of my knowledge, any cop, the plainclothes cops that ever went to any of the sedum, not that I'm saying that they should, but threw them up against a wall and handcuffed them for not having masks.
Yes,
but
they know
who to do it to, and they know what the law will do and will not do. Now, there was an incident also, I believe, where a black man was walking down the street. Didn't have a mask on, and this Puerto Rican plainclothes cop came, slapped him in the face, threw him to the ground, And according to Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, it's not an arrestable offense.
Well, it's not.
Right. But in Williamsburg, there was like 250 people at a burial, and they were carrying the coffin through the streets. Not one, but most of them did not have masks on. There was
They were observing, strictly observing, the ritual burial of a high-standing member, a religious leader. And they were just following their thing about how you do that, what happens and what doesn't happen. And they're in full control of their community. Everybody understands that, including the cops.
That doesn't negate the point about wearing a mask. I'm not saying they shouldn't have the right to do that.
You are missing the point. When a community determines its power and affirms its power, people would just leave you alone. Because implicit in all of that is they are prepared for a fight. They're prepared to fight. In some cases, it's so extreme, they're prepared to die. We haven't seen many communities with that kind of resolve. And so those communities are vulnerable. The authorities do whatever they want and get away with it.
So am I naive to say that I should not believe that there's law, that it should just be power?
No, the law should be for everyone. You're missing the point. A community, I'm saying the word community in all of its implications, a community decides what will happen inside of it and what will not, regardless of the law, regardless of custom, regardless of whether people like it or not. A community decides what will happen inside of it or not.
I appreciate it. I don't want to hold up the line. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for your call.
Yes,
thank you so much for your call. Jay from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how you doing?
Okay, how's by you?
Good. I think it's time for you to come back to Brooklyn, my love. I really think it's time for you to come back to Brooklyn.
Good. Well, its location is not as important as it used to be. You can be as effective as you can be with the aid of technology. You can be as effective as you want to be.
Well, listen, I would just like to say it's amazing how now we have an individual like the president who wants to claim that he's made Juneteenth famous. I mean, the arrogance is just amazing. But even what's worse, is now that you have black elected officials who want a panda and trying to make it into a holiday and hope that it will make people want to vote for the Democratic Party. It just becomes more and more of the absurd every day with these people and the manner in which they pander to now they're talking about, well, Klobuchar has stepped out of the race and we are now going to
Klobuchar, who was one of the women supposedly on Joe Biden's list of
VP
contenders for the VP position. Yes.
Right. Now they're going to say, we're going to give you maybe a black woman. But the sad thing in all of this is you're not going to be able to get people out to vote for you because you have no narrative or no plan or no agenda to get people to come out and vote for you. You don't even have the intelligence to gather up your so-called black troops, black surrogates, into a room and have them put together a plan on how they could get young people, middle-aged people, men. You don't have to worry about women because, unfortunately, they just the sheep of the party, and they gonna do whatever the party wishes upon them to do. But you can't even collectively come together with your so-called surrogates like y'all.
Well, I'm waiting to see how it all turns out. And I'm waiting to see when Joe Biden turns up the volume. And can he handle it? Is he going to last? We'll see. Thanks, Jay, for your call today. And take some, I hear a little sniffle in your voice today. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air. Hello, Harvey.
Hello, Utrice. How are you today?
Okay. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for your encouragement about keeping our neighborhoods trash-free. I go out almost every day and with my pickup stick and a garbage bag, and I keep our block super clean, which is so important during this time of the corona where people get so depressed. So a clean neighborhood more than ever is is the way to go right now. And secondly, I have an idea. It's not a new idea to help people, especially in poor communities, lift themselves out of poverty by tapping into America's number one readily available abundant resource, and I'm talking about the our ever-growing amount of garbage. Our oceans and aquatic life are choking on garbage. Our nation's landfills are overflowing. It's not a pretty picture. And landfills are one of the biggest emitters of greenhouse gases like CO2 that are heating up our planet at an unsustainable rate. So it's time that we turn this national liability into an asset. And people who live in low-income communities can become national leaders in reversing this trend. And here's one idea. Instead of throwing food scraps into the garbage, which end up in the landfill, people would be encouraged to separate food scraps, which would be collected and composted, which could be used locally to fertilize community gardens and backyard gardens to grow an abundance of healthy organic fruits and vegetables. And locally grown produce can be traded or sold or even given away free at neighborhood organic farmers markets, which would save a lot of people who live in economically disadvantaged communities a lot of money while creating sustainable employment within the community and helping people get back to a very healthy lifestyle, which, as we know, the poor communities suffer the most because of their bad food consumption or eating the wrong foods. And so I believe that this would be one way for us to both save the world and save ourselves and instill new pride in people. And I think the NAACP, they have lawyers and have branches all over, at least a couple thousand branches in communities around America. I think that the local bureaucrats would resent this if people started trading food and raising their own food, and supermarkets would protest. So communities would need help from lawyers, NAACP lawyers, who would help them transition away from this kind of like bad food thing that we're in now, all this fast food and junk food, toward a better food lifestyle and organic fruits and vegetables. It'll lift people's spirits, it'll lift their economy, and it'll create a better world all at the same time. So that's one of my ideas.
Good ideas, actually. Thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you.
Chris from West Palm Beach, you're on the air.
Utrice, good afternoon. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, we're doing all right. We're here in Florida. You know, they tell us these cases of this virus are going up. You know, so everyone is acting accordingly.
In fact, we struck a record yesterday, a record number of coronavirus cases, in excess of 2,000 new cases. So this is something not to be ignored. But what are you talking about today?
Well, I did want to, you know, stay on the topic of the virus, in that I'm very concerned that they will be using the NBA to market a vaccine, or just to further the psychological operation that's underway with this virus. In that, I say that because Dr. Fauci is on TV telling the NFL that they cannot come back to play, right? Unless they get tested every day, et cetera, et cetera. I noticed during his entire conference, he left out the NBA. They have plans to come to Florida, Orlando specifically, at the end of next month. But he left them out, and all I'm seeing in the media is, oh, the NBA players are set to wear this new technology, these rings that detect corona symptoms 3 days in advance. I don't know how that makes any sense, but it seems as if they want to push the contact tracing agenda on to the NBA audience, because they know that audience would be the most hesitant against whatever vaccine or treatment they come up with. And they should be they should be skeptical, because in everything I'm reading about the production of the vaccine is they're skipping all of the usual tests and policies, et cetera, and they're going straight to human trials. So I'm a little concerned about that, to be honest.
Well, good idea to be concerned about it, because you just got us concerned about it too. So it's something to keep on our radar. Thanks so much.
And then can I just say one more thing? It'd be very short.
Sure.
Okay. And to tie it all together, Melinda Gates was in the Time magazine article, I believe, last week, and she made reference to, oh, when the vaccine becomes available, after the healthcare workers, the next group that should get it because of racism is Black people. So I'm a little concerned, because the day after, then they issued a whole bunch of corrections saying that she didn't mean it like that. And then NBC then followed the next day with another article stating that Black people need to participate in these vaccine trials, and they're noticing the hesitation. So again, I just wonder, America's never been good to Black folks, right? They've never given us anything good, free, first, right? So in 2020, I'm very skeptical.
And I think we, all of us, whether you're Black or not, or white or not, you have reason to be skeptical. Because don't forget, the unmentionable is the thing that we should be concerned about, and that is the amount of money that people envision making over this vaccine. And not just in the United States. This is a global
a
boondoggle. So there's a lot of people are situating themselves in positions of power and influence, because that is really what they're after now. They're after the contracts, they're after the rights to the vaccine and so forth. So it never ends.
And if you have an iPhone, people, make sure you're checking the COVID notifications are off, because they put one on there. Same for Google users. Go through your settings. Make sure that you're not transmitting additional information. They slide these things in the updates. I was just talking to a coworker about it, and I showed her on her phone. So just, like I said, be mindful.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Lee from New York, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to comment on the gentleman that you were speaking to, maybe about four calls.
Hold a second. We're getting a lot of echoing, so you may want to speak directly into your phone for clarity's sake.
Okay. The gentleman that you spoke to, maybe four or five callers prior to mine, could not get the concept that you were trying to convey to him about community. And I have a perfect example for him to think about. And that is that when the Nation of Islam had Malcolm X as their leader here in New York City, he was able to control the police. And I think the gentleman could go on YouTube and get a tape that shows that very clearly.
How was he able to do that in making your point?
Excuse me?
How was he able to do that to illustrate your point?
Okay. There was someone in jail that he wanted released immediately, and they had a vigil outside the police station, and they determined that they were not going to be moved until the person was released, and the police had to give in.
Yes, in fact, that was a key scene in the movie X, where Malcolm had the mosque members completely surround the police precinct, and to stay there until the leaders of the precinct or the captain of the precinct saw some common sense. What he was after, Malcolm X was after, was the release of this man who allegedly had been beaten by police. And he was not inclined to leave the precinct without him. Finally, the police captain saw that this was just not going to work the way he thought it was going to work, that, you know, his word would be the last word and Malcolm and the members of the mosque would just disappear. But then he saw it was not going to happen and he relented. And in the movie, at least, Malcolm comes to the front of the precinct, the main entrance to the precinct, and he gives a signal and they all disappear. And he walks out of the precinct with the person he was looking for to help. And in the movie, anyway, the captain was given a line saying that is too much power for a man to have. Although he too was black. But you're quite right about that. The power of the people shapes the reaction and the actions of those who see themselves as the regulators of the community. They're not the regulators of the community. And I dare say in many groups that have taken a similar stance, irrespective of their religion or their beliefs, you find the same dynamic. Tremendous respect by the police or any authority. They don't just casually invade a community or come knocking on your door. That is not the way it happens at all in these communities. So you're correct to raise that example.
I just want to say one more thing in that regard, and that was the fact that it was done in a very peaceful manner, which shows that you don't have to do anything but be there, stand your ground.
Well, it was done in a peaceful manner, but with a lot of unseen muscle behind it. These people were peaceful, but it was understood, we are peaceful as long as you are.
Exactly.
Okay, then. Because if one wrong move was made, they're prepared to die.
Exactly.
There you go. They're not kidding. Everybody understands the rules. And that's where you get this notion of respect. You control your own community. Mm-hmm. And you control the way you operate within your own community. And people see it and they understand exactly where they stand. You don't have to preach. You don't have to cuss. You don't have to fight. They understand.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in and contributing today. Leona, you're on the air.
Greetings, Eutrice, and greetings to your audience.
Thank you.
I was calling because there's just two things I wanted to make sure people are aware of. One is a film, a particular film, and the other one is a book. First, let me talk about the film. Right now, up until, well, there's this film festival going on. It's called the American Film Institute Docs Film Festival, and it's running from June 17 to June 21st, Sunday. There's a section of the film festival called Cinema Legacy. And in the Cinema Legacy section of this film festival, and this is all online, this is streaming online, there are three films that people can watch for free if they are so interested. The films are called, one is called Freedom on My Mind, one is called Sisters of 77, one is called Nation Time Gary. I want to talk about Nation Time Gary briefly. This film is 79 minutes long, and I'm going to read the quote right quick. It says, in quote, in March 1972, an estimated 10,000 black politicians, activists, artists congregated at the National Black Political Convention in Gary, Indiana, with the express purpose of establishing a black agenda. Attendees included Reverend Jesse Jackson, Dick Gregory, Coretta Scott King, Amiri Baraka, Richard Hatcher, Charles Diggs, H. Carl McCall. Also in attendance was prolific documentarian of black history, culture, and politics, William Greaves. He wrote, he did some film with a long name, Symbiocycle-Taxoplasm. But anyway, it goes on to say, his filmed account of this historic event, narrated by Sidney Poitier with poetry recited by Harry Belafonte, was at the time thought to be too radical for television broadcast and was drastically edited. Now, restored to its original cut in a 4K restoration from Indie Collect with funding from Jane Fonda and the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, this rousing and revelatory documentary celebrates diversity, a diversity of black voices, finding support and solidarity even amid expected tensions and divisions, end of quote. That film can be viewed up until Sunday if you have a computer online live streaming. The other two are historic as well. The one, Freedom on My Mind, has to do with the Mississippi Voter Registration Project. And the third one, Sisters of 77, has to do with the National Women's Conference in 1977, presided over by Congresswoman Bella Abzug.
Abzug, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, so people could go to the website. It's called, the website is https://docs.afi.com. Or they could, you know, use a search engine to get to it. It's the American Film Institute's Docs Film Festival, and it runs until, again, Sunday. And those three films can be viewed online for free. There are some others that you have to pay for, and I'm sure they're probably just as interesting. Okay, that, I wanted to let you know about the that. And the other thing I wanted to share about was this book, this new book called From Here to Eternity, subtitled Reparations for Black Americans in the 21st Century. This book is written by William A. Darity, Jr. and A. Kirsten Mullen. It's a husband and wife team, and Darity is an economist, black economist. He's a professor at Duke University, and I've only begun to read it, but I've been waiting for it to be released, and it has been released, and it's available. It's published by University of North Carolina Press. Again, the title is From Here to Equality, Reparations for Black Americans in the 21st Century. So that's all I had to share.
Well, thank you. You said that first, From Here to Eternity.
Oh, I apologize. Doggone, that's that old film, right?
That was a movie.
Oh, yes, yes, ma'am, a movie.
Starring Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, that's right. I think I even saw that once online. I apologize. It's From Here to Equality. And in the book, they outline a plan, an actual plan, a program for black reparations. But, you know, those who are interested, from here to equality, reparations for black Americans in the 21st century, William A. Darity Jr. and Kirsten Mullen.
Well, thank you so much for contributing that. And guess what? You brought our program today to a close. I thank you for calling in. I thank you all for calling in and contributing. I look forward to Free Your Mind Friday, every Friday, because you never know what's coming up. You never know what people want to talk about. And that's part of the excitement of it all. It is the weekend, and I encourage you to do what I always encourage you to do. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension in your life, who add positivity in your life. And that is an energy that by itself can keep you going. And take care. Be very careful out there. Watch out for this virus and do the things that you're supposed to do to keep yourself far away from it and it far away from you. We'll see each other on Monday. And I thank you so much for making this program such a wonderful thing for me and for, I hope, everybody else, that we have our own little community here, and let's nurture it and keep it going. Bye-bye.